Spirit Blade Underground Episode
463.
Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground Episode
463.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, my reactions to E3. Holy crap, this was a long week with lots of stuff that if you didn't know this, I didn't go to E3. But one of the luxuries, I guess, of the kind of work that I do is that when something like this comes along, I can spend my days for, you know, three, four, you know, and in this case, it was about close to 5 days, I think, in a row, just taking in all the media coverage that I can possibly find and just kind of taking some notes and then presenting my thoughts. So hopefully, yeah, my reactions will be interesting. I don't know. Anyway, so I'm going to talk about the announcements that jumped out to me, the hidden gems that maybe you didn't catch, if you did watch like the press conferences and some other stuff. And then also I'm going to share my most anticipated games. So just, it's all about E3 and video games and a bunch of empty promises today. All right, let's get to it. Nice, another achievement unlocked. I bet I got more achievements than anybody I know.
Yes, sitting in front of a video game for 5 hours a day is quite an achievement.
See, this is why I don't like talking to you.
Then why don't you spend more time with real people?
Because real people don't respond to console commands.
Wow, Peter. You unlocked yet another achievement. You must have more achievements than anyone you know. Behold. You are great, and greatly to be praised.
Yeah, better. All right, so I just watched the E3 2017 press conference for EA, and I thought, for my taste, it was a big improvement over last year. They still had some sportsy stuff going on, but they've got a story mode now for Madden 18 that's being introduced that almost makes me think, gosh, if there was a way that someone else could play the football parts, or maybe the game could actually play the football games for me, and I could just make my like career story path choices, I might be interested in at least, you know, giving it a rental sometime and just playing around with it. That's a cool idea. One thing that I noticed throughout the press conference was that despite EA's historical reputation for coming across as somewhat anti-consumer with a seemingly cold focus on just kind of milking customers, you know, as much as they can, they really seemed in this event to have a strong consumer focus. They talked about getting feedback from players and learning from what players liked and frankly what they didn't like. The British CEO suit guy, whoever he is, that comes out every year, he talked about specifically regarding Star Wars Battlefront 1 getting both positive and constructive feedback, and he just kind of said it as an aside, that's a euphemism for not as positive. And so I felt like that was just kind of a nice moment of transparency. And I felt like those little moments of increased transparency were found from a number of the presenters throughout the entire press conference. People in marketing and advertising study humans and study their audience, study what they're going to respond to, what they're like, what their values are. And so I always like to pay attention to kind of like the marketing language of these kinds of things to see what it reveals about either where we collectively are or where these publishers kind of think we are, or what they think we value. And one of the presenters said in passing, "Games connect us," and I thought that was really interesting. And I wondered, you know, is that really true? Do we just kind of like the idea of being connected in theory? I think we do, but what we see more often, you know, is connection via superficial means and on a superficial level. As social media has grown and all the different ways that we can connect with each other has only diversified, I feel like at the same time it's gotten pretty shallow. That's one of the reasons that an item on my wish list video was for developers to create games that have couch co-op in mind, so that we can encourage not just online play, where you're certainly interacting, you're certainly having friendships, but it's not the same as like inviting someone into your home and being a host to them and letting them kind of invade your living space and just kind of be with you in your space. The Bible teaches that in particular, as Christians, we shouldn't neglect meeting together. And then the context there is more in terms of, I think, community worship, but it's also the community experience of just living life together as believers. And elsewhere, the Bible values hospitality as a virtue that we should be practiced in. So I don't think we want to relax too much about how connected we are these days. I think that word can be a little bit unintentionally deceptive. The good news is EA does provide a very truly connective experience, and I'll get to that in just a minute. When they started talking about the new FIFA game, they mentioned the idea that they want to make stars of all of their players of this game. And throughout the presentation, they seemed to be kind of appealing to our desire for recognition, for applause, for significance, for status among our peers, rather than appealing to pure competition, the thrill that of challenge that another player that you're playing against can provide, or personal skill development. It really seemed to be more about becoming a star, having a certain like status above and everybody else. But really, our significance, as I think I mentioned in my wish list video, it comes from the fact that we were created in some way to reflect God, and that He put Himself through agony in order to rescue us, so that we could have eternal relationship with Him. After FIFA came the new Need for Speed game. It looks really cool. I had a blast playing Mad Max, and that my experience with that kind of makes me want to do another car racing, smashing combat type game with, you know, slow motion crashes and slow motion takedowns, which this one had some really cool things like that going on in the footage that they showed. But I'm probably going to suck at this game, so maybe I'll give it a try, but we'll see. Here's the game that was possibly like the high point of EA's conference for me. It's called A Way Out. This is shockingly a co-op only game. You can't play this game by yourself. Now you might say, well, multiplayer only games have been around for a while. No, this is specifically you and one other player, and it can be played online, but the developer was clear it's intended to be played via couch co-op. The game is, it seems to be kind of like a prison escape game about two brothers that are trying to escape from prison. And so one player plays one brother, the other player plays the other, and the game, through its mechanics and also through the storytelling, is about their relationship, about them working together and the bond that they share. And it also, in the trailer, showed aspects of their relationships with other family members in their lives. And they were, you know, definitely seemed kind of dysfunctional, like they messed up in life. I mean, to get where they're at, they probably did, unless they were sentenced for crimes they didn't commit. I don't know. I assume that they were guilty, but I don't know. But either way, it seemed that there was dysfunction. It wasn't a perfect relationship. It was definitely had its messes in it, but there was also genuine love there. I mean, watching the trailer, I kind of almost started to well up. I was like, am I about to cry right now? I don't know if I'm going to like this game, but this is the kind of couch co-op, in-home hospitality encouraging experience that I was thinking of when I made my E3 wish list this year. I kind of imagine friends setting up weekly appointments to get together in the same room and play this game until they're all the way through it, assuming that it'll take more than one session to finish the game. But I hope this is a great game. I hope it is very popular, because I'd love to see more games like it. Oh man, I was thinking of me and my wife and how I'd love to have a game like this, but that's about a husband and wife that are maybe kind of there. They love each other, but they have conflict as well. And, you know, oh man, there's really neat stuff. And we don't have to wait long to play A Way Out. It's going to be coming early 2021. 2018. Awesome. I'm very interested to see what comes of that. I've been very curious about BioWare's new intellectual property and wondering if they're going to win me back, if they're going to create finally again an RPG for RPG gamers, which they seem to have just kind of increasingly abandoned, you know, ever since after putting out Dragon Age Origins. And we just got a little teeny tease of whatever this new IP is, just enough to see that it's some kind of sci-fi type thing. They said to wait for Microsoft's conference to get a whole bunch more details about the game. So I guess that's what I'm going to do. The promotion for NBA Live 18 really emphasized the player being the one. You are the one. And it was a reminder to me about how games in general try to give players the feeling of being extra important, extra significant. What would be cool would for me would be to see like a AAA game. You can find this in smaller indie type games, but a AAA game that puts you in the role of a behind the scenes character who does something good and noble, but that really no one ever knows about, and that makes that a meaningful and satisfying experience for the player. I would love to see that kind of thing, as opposed to this default focus on trying to simulate this boost in our own significance. Then they ended their press conference by talking about Star Wars Battlefront 2. I was surprised again at how much they really acknowledged how fans were disappointed in the lack of a campaign in the original Star Wars Battlefront that released a year or two ago. The game also includes a couch co-op in the form of a skirmish mode, which I thought, hey, great, another couch co-op opportunity. The footage, the gameplay footage, was really cool looking. Like, they had some footage that was taking place on whatever that planet is that Queen Amidala rules over, you know, from episode one of Star Wars. And I was like, dang, it makes that place look cool and good. I have almost no good memories of that first episode. But this makes me, like, kind of want to go there and play the game and check it out, or, you know, not watch the movie again. But I'm tempted to kind of give this game a try. Unfortunately, the campaign doesn't feature, I don't think, levels across the broad range of the trilogy. At least the story of the campaign doesn't stretch across the entire franchise of both trilogies or whatever. It just bridges the gap between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, or partially bridges that gap. So I'm a little bummed about that. Campaign, great step in the right direction, but man, if you're going to make all these levels, then gosh, can't you find some reason to put the campaign on, you know, these locations and stuff, so I can play through it single player? One thing I thought was really cool is that Battlefront 2 is going to be getting themed season content for free to keep the community engaged, which I thought was really smart. If I'm interpreting that right, I'm guessing that it's going to be temporary season content. Like, you'll be able to use these characters for this amount of time, then they're going to take them away again and replace them with something else and stuff like that. So they're not asking players to pay for these additional things like they, I think, were doing with the original Battlefront. But they're not permanent either, and so it kind of keeps players coming back, at least in multiplayer, which, you know, that won't do anything for me, but I still think that's probably more consumer-friendly than having a bunch of, like, nickel-and-diming type of DLC packs. Anyway, Star Wars Battlefront 2 looks very cool. I'll definitely be watching the reviews when it comes out to see if it's something that maybe would be have enough of a single-player experience and be my kind of game enough that it'd be worth me giving it a try. As far as my wish list goes, I did not get a few things, but I did get some things. I did not get a new Knights of the Old Republic-ish Star Wars RPG. Bummer. I did not get a Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning sequel like that was going to happen. I didn't get a BioWare RPG for RPG fans, but that might still be coming with this new IP. We'll have to stay tuned for Microsoft's conference. And I didn't get an avoidance of self-validation through gaming. The example I gave in my wish list was kind of using diversity for diversity's sake, but that was just one example. And I think another form that it took in this one was this really kind of focus on propping up the player and enticing them to become a star and to get recognition from their peers through competitive means, or to have a focus as kind of the one, you know, which, you know, that's pretty common to lots of games. Both of those really are. So I'm not like shame on EA for those, but it would have been cool to avoid those things. What I did get was short wait times on at least two of the games that were announced for release. The Battlefield 2, Star Wars Battlefront 2, whatever it's called, that's coming early November, and then A Way Out is coming in early 2018. So that's really cool that they weren't talking about, spending a lot of time talking about these things that are really way far off. I also got, and this was a wonderful surprise, as an increased transparency, I felt like, and an increased level of humility from EA and from those that were presenting. I really tip my hat to them for that. Really good stuff. And then I also finally, and this was the biggest surprise and the thing I was most excited about that I got from my wish list that I really didn't think I was going to get, at least not to this degree, was a co-op experience that encourages in-person relationships and hospitality in the real world, you know? Yeah, very cool. So I was, you know, even though I'm not sure if I'll be playing any of the games that were talked about in the EA's press conference, I really enjoyed watching it, and I'll definitely be keeping my eyes on at least a couple of things that they were talking about, and we'll see what happens. I want to remind you guys to go check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network. All of these podcasts are putting out great content. Shows like the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, which might be of particular interest right about now, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com. I just finished watching Microsoft's E3 2017 press conference, and I don't think I'm the audience for Microsoft these days. I had a lot of hardware problems with the Xbox 360, as many gamers did, so they have a lot of trust they need to build back with me. But they announced the Xbox One X, the official name of the Xbox One, or the Project Scorpio, or whatever, but this is their new model of Xbox, which plays all the new games coming out, but also the regular Xbox One and the Xbox One S will, all three of those systems will all play the same games, but the Xbox One X will just do them super duper well, you know, and it's the most powerful console ever made, you know. It's coming out November 7th with a price tag of $499. The Xbox One S at that time, I think, will be $249. They say that your current library of Xbox One games, and I think they were talking about Xbox 360 backwards compatible games too, will look and run better, even in 1080p if you don't have a 4K television, which I thought was really good news, because I'm not planning on upgrading to 4K for probably a few years at least. So knowing that there's, you know, still some benefits for someone like me was cool. That said, I'm not a graphics connoisseur, so it really doesn't mean much to me to be talking about how this looks amazing, it's the best looking, blah blah blah. You know, it doesn't make that much difference to me. And also, all their talk about this being the most powerful console ever made, well, with the exception maybe of what Nintendo's been doing in the last, you know, few generations of their consoles, I kind of feel like every new video game console that comes out is the most powerful console ever made, at least for a little while, until, you know, the competition comes out with their next console. So, you know, all of that was just kind of going in one ear and out the other for me. They talked a bit about their craftsmanship on this, and that being like a high priority to have really good craftsmanship, and I think that's probably a good idea for people like me that are still remembering the burn of the issues with the Xbox 360. But they talked a lot of technobabble that ultimately, for me, I don't know, I don't understand. So I just need to see how long this is going to last for users, how faithfully it's going to withstand hours and hours and hours of play without breaking down. Or it talks about having this liquid cooling system. And I have no idea what that is, but when you talk about liquid being inside of an electronic device made by Microsoft, that makes me nervous. Let's see, what else? Last year, they really had trouble getting their exclusive games to release, like games that actually were only going to be playable as far as console play goes on the Xbox One. They had several cancellations and stuff, so this was a year I was really curious to see what they were going to do in that regard. At the top of the show, Phil Spencer said that there were 22 games that they were going to be showing during the press conference that were console exclusives, but as I watched the conference and decoded some of the marketing speak, it became clear to me that most were only console launch exclusives, which I think indicates that they, when they launch, will launch first and for a little while only be at launch available on the Xbox One as far as console play goes, but will eventually be available on other consoles. So that really doesn't say a whole lot to me. It doesn't give me a really strong persuasive reason. I have plenty of games to play. I can wait a little while longer, however long it takes, a year or two even, for those same games to come out on the PlayStation 4. The real exclusives that they had were far fewer in number than 22. And I think if I'm counting them correctly, they include Forza 7 Motorsport, which is a car you know, racing game. State of Decay 2, which is a post-apocalyptic zombie survival, you know, town building kind of, community building kind of game. Sea of Thieves, which is an online multiplayer pirate game. Super Lucky's Tale, which is like a almost like a Super Mario Galaxy clone featuring a little fox jumping around. Cuphead, which is a 1930s animation style side-scrolling platformer. Crackdown 3, which featured Terry Crews, which I think is some maybe athletic football kind of guy that maybe people that are into sports will be excited to see in the little promo that they had for it, but it didn't do anything for me. And then Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which is a sequel to Ori and the Blind Forest. That one actually has no release date even. So I felt like the exclusives they had really didn't say much to me. The only one that really stands out of those would be State of Decay 2. But I have yet to play State of Decay 1, which I can play on 360, haven't gotten around to yet. So I'm not feeling a real strong pull with their lineup of exclusives to go out and buy an Xbox One. I feel like also I am not the target demographic for Xbox these days. If I were to try and figure out what that demographic is, and I don't want to, like, you know, put anybody in a box, and I don't want this to sound insulting, so I recognize that I might not be choosing the best words here, but give me some grace and bear with me as I try to explore this. I think that their target demographic is something like what I might call a jock gamer as opposed to like a nerd gamer, whereas nerd gamers are going to be more into nerdy type things, you know, like really hardcore into fantasy, really hardcore into sci-fi. They're more likely to be into RP role-playing games or strategy games, these kind of thinky types of experiences, whereas like what I would call the jock gamer is going to be more into sports games, they're going to be more into multiplayer, they're going to be more into competition, and they're going to prefer action games over like slower, more deliberate games. And they're not going to really necessarily be into strategy slash tactics or, you know, heavy story oriented games. So I don't want to label anybody and say, you know, that anyone is just a jock gamer, but I'm just talking about this kind of like prototypical type of person. I think that's kind of where they lean more, and I just tend to be not into sports games or multiplayer games or competition, and I'm very hesitant about playing action games, you know, unless I feel like I'll be able to handle them, because I just suck at hand-eye coordination type stuff. So and then also, you know, they you know, the use of Terry Crews, which is some athlete guy. They also for Forza bring out a new car, and they even just talk about the car for a little while. I'm like, what? Why are you talking about this car? Talk about video games, please. It was short, but it was still like, why are you wasting any time on this? So it just seems like they were speaking to an audience that I am not, you know, part of that core audience for them. So let's see here. So, personal game highlights include Metro Exodus. I've been enjoying the up-resed Metro games, at least the first one of the two that have been released so far on the PS4. They are a little bit like intense for me because you're like fighting monsters and going through corridors that are creepy and stuff like that. So I'm not always in the mood for it because it's a little bit intense, but I have been enjoying it. And so seeing this trailer, and it looks kind of cool. It looks like it might be going a little bit open world, or maybe fully open world. And with as much as I'm enjoying the Metro game so far, I'm like, okay, great. This gives me all the more reason to finish my playthrough of the Metro games so that I can be ready for Metro Exodus when it comes out in 2018. Sometime in 2018 is when that is said to be coming. Then another game that caught my interest, Assassin's Creed Origins, after seeing the movie, which I thought was, you know, that's not a bad movie, you know. But the world in the movie was really what caught my attention, made me want to try the games for the first time. And so I am now just starting Assassin's Creed Revelations, the third game in the series. I've really been enjoying the gameplay and the story and the liberties they take with history and the Bible and all kinds of... They do some really weird stuff. There's some major logical inconsistencies going on there that are just kind of interesting to kind of chew on and explore. And then I really, really enjoy the gameplay. So I'm an Assassin's Creed fan now. And so I'm definitely looking forward to this one. They seem to be borrowing some elements from Far Cry Primal. You're going to have like this eagle that you can have soar above you, and you can see through his eyes to kind of spot enemies and tag them, you know, before you go into an enemy area. The guy talking about, the developer talking about the game, said they're adding many RPG elements, which I'm like, great. It looks like, from the gameplay we saw, it's going to have some leveling up stuff and some ability points that reminds me a lot of what I've been seeing in the Far Cry games recently. Like, I'm thinking of specifically 4 and Far Cry Primal. So, I'm very interested to see where they're going to go. That's probably going to be an insta-buy for me. I'm interested to see also in this game who the big bad is, because so far in my experience of the few that I've played so far, it's the Catholic Church. They're doing a cover-up, or they're corrupt, or whatever, or it's some, you know, Christianity in some form, you know, is a lie and all that kind of stuff, and you know, so it's some form of Christianity the institution surrounding Christianity. But I mean, the Assassin's Creed series also basically puts forth the idea that a bunch of it is a lie. All the stuff that we know about Jesus is like largely false and stuff like that. So I'm interested, like, who's going to be their big bad that they are trying to liberate the world from when they go all the way back to ancient Egypt? So, I mean, are they actually going to, in some way make Yahweh their enemy? Which would be, interesting. So we'll see what happens there. I'm very curious about that, but I'm mostly just interested in more of that Assassin's Creed style of gameplay. Really been enjoying all the mechanisms that those games have. Another game that caught my attention, this one I probably will not play, just doesn't seem like my kind of thing, is the Darwin Project. They brought on, like, when they were showing gameplay, a shoutcaster, you know, who's kind of like talking, yeah, she's doing this attack, and da-da-da-da, and now he's being attacked, oh, he's out, and like, I was like, okay, so they're trying to, I think, show us that this is going to be an esports game. That's kind of their intention here. It seemed to be some kind of like a large environmental arena, last man standing online type of action game. Definitely not my thing, but you know, I think it's a fitting title if the game is really just about kind of coldly killing each other to rise to the top. I mean, that is the natural morality system that logically grows out of a pure naturalistic evolution. So the title and the theming of that one caught my attention. The last game to catch my attention, another one I will not be playing, will be Anthem. This is from BioWare. It's the one that was teased in EA's conference, and we finally saw gameplay this time. This one's coming out in 2018, but who knows when, so it may not even be until after next year's E3 that it actually comes out. It is an online sci-fi multiplayer first-person shooter. All right, well, goodbye, BioWare. In your early days, you gave me many great gaming experiences, but clearly you are now officially going off in a direction that is just not going to interest me at all. So hopefully many other players will enjoy these experiences that you're creating these days, because I can't see how I will. All right. So let's see here. One thing, just as an overall note about the games that they talked about, there were a number of games shown that had no release window. I felt like Microsoft was struggling to kind of show game, to give us reasons from a video game software standpoint to buy an Xbox One. They were showing a bunch of games, but a lot of them were not exclusive to the Xbox One, that, you know, either at release they would be available elsewhere, or just maybe wait a little while and they'll be available elsewhere. There was just like a little more than a handful maybe of games that were just really going to be exclusive to the Xbox One. And then a significant number of the games that they showed teasers or trailers for didn't even have any kind of year or release window or anything. And I'm just like, why are you wasting my time? You're just going to show us this again at next year's E3. So I'm not confident in where they're sitting as far as their exclusive games and their software enticements. Is that the right word? I don't know. I'm trying to do a little less editing so I can get this video up a little bit sooner, so sorry about that. The most exciting moment for me in this press conference, even though largely I admit, uninterested, because a lot of what they were talking about and hyping up just wasn't my kind of gaming experience. But the most exciting moment was when they talked about backwards compatibility. There are, I think they said, 385 Xbox 360 titles that are now backwards compatible and playable on the Xbox One. And they made the announcement that backwards compatibility for original Xbox games is coming. There's going to be more info later on this year. I'm super curious about this. It was met with a cheer from the audience. I'm wondering, is this going to be disc-based? I would love to. I've still got my copy of Knights of the Old Republic. I don't have an Xbox One, so I guess that's not really going to help me. But I mean, anyway, more than anything, I'm excited that this could say something to Sony. It probably won't. It probably won't. But I would love it if this would kind of stir up Sony's competition and they would just say, yeah, yeah, okay, we can do the backwards compatibility thing because I want disc-based backwards compatibility for PS2 games on my PS4. I don't think that's going to happen, but this was one more little ray of hope that maybe they'll give us some give Sony some competition that will kind of lead them to want to do that. So anyway, if I look at my checklist for, you know, or excuse me, if I check my wish list for this conference, I did not get a more full embrace of PC crossover from, you know, PC to Xbox One back and forth. I wildly dreamed that they might somehow bridge the gap between console and PCs in a way that was more rich and deep and than just kind of like having a game that you buy on one playable instantly on the other, you know. So I didn't get more of that kind of crossover stuff going on. That's fine. What I did get was competition that I think can potentially make Sony better, and that's specifically regarding the Xbox original backwards compatibility. I got a heavy game focus with some titles that are releasing soon, even though there are hardly any, certainly no exclusives, and not very many other titles that like are really interesting to me. It was still a heavy game focus with a good amount of titles that are releasing soon. That was really nice. And then I also asked specifically for backwards compatibility, so that kind of like I'm double dipping that one a little bit, but it was neat. I definitely got some things on my wish list. So at the end of the day, you know, I'm nowhere closer at all to becoming an Xbox, you know, owner again, but they did some things that I'm happy about. So yeah, at the end of the day, what more can I ask for, really? If you didn't stay up late last night to watch the Bethesda press conference, you didn't miss much. I know I'm not the only one befuddled by this, but I'm wondering why they had a live press conference when they could have just done kind of a digital event. They had Pete Hines, the head of marketing for Bethesda, come out onto a stage and, you know, talk to an audience, and then it was like roll tape. And then, like, the rest of the 40 minutes, almost exclusively, I think, was just this video rolling of this Bethesda Land concept. It was like this fake video ad for a fictional theme park centered around Bethesda game attractions and properties and stuff. And so that was kind of like their device for segueing from one game to another. And it was just really a bunch of streamlined presentations of clips with almost no explanation relative to previous press conferences they've done and other press conferences at E3, relatively no explanation of like what the features are of these things that they're talking about, the games that they're talking about. They talked about Fallout or Doom VFR and Fallout VR, these VR experiences for the Doom world. The Doom game seems to be like a totally different experience. I don't think it's the actual same game, whereas Fallout 4 VR seems to be Fallout 4 just in VR, and they've added like some new AI elements, so that looks cool if you're doing VR, that they've taken the time to actually create a user interface that's going to play to the strengths of VR. So that looks like it could be a really cool full game, like massively full game experience for VR. But I mean, I'm not the audience for that because I'm just waiting until, for me right now, VR is still a gimmick. It needs to be smoothed out so that people aren't getting headaches, so that they can comfortably play games for, you know, the same length I would play games on my TV, you know. And right now, that's from my understanding, that's not what people are typically able to do. That typically after about 20 to 30 minutes, people are like, okay, I'm done with that for whatever reason, either because of just personal taste they want to change things up, or because of headaches or discomfort or vision things or whatever. So for me right now, it's a gimmick, and they are far from smoothing it out to make it something that I'm going to want to put down money for. But it was still, you know, yeah, okay, fine, you know, that was, at least they're putting effort into not just kind of like tacking on VR compatibility for Fallout 4 VR. Then they talked about Elder Scrolls Online Morrowind. I'm not into MMORPGs. I would honestly give this one a try if they would make it available without a monthly subscription to either Bethesda services or PlayStation services. I just like paying for games once, and I've heard that you can have pretty much a solo experience with this game. I mean, you're still aware of other players named Monkey Dookie 967 or whatever running around, which kind of breaks my immersion a little bit. Another reason I stay away from MMOs. But I mean, even with that, I'd be willing to give it a try if it weren't for the subscription services that I would have to pay for. So, not on my radar still. The Creation Club is on my radar. This is for essentially paid premium mods. They're allowing people to create mods that will then be like sold on the marketplace for Fallout 4 and for Skyrim, and a Skyrim Special Edition anyway, as far as consoles go. And I think there's probably going to be a lot of like, oh, paid mods, da 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 da. But if they're good and they are going to be curated, they're not just going to let anybody do this. You have to apply to even like submit created content to be considered for this. So there is a curation process, and ultimately, I think the market will just decide, And I think that if it's curated, there's going to be a smaller number of them, and we may be more likely to see reviews of these curated mods, so that could be good for the consumer as well. So I'm not afraid of this idea. I don't think it's a bad sign necessarily. In fact, I think it could be a really good thing for some that will bring about some really great possibilities for both of those games in the future. So we'll see. Then they showed the Elder Scrolls card game. They showed a Switch playing Skyrim, and you can use like a Link amiibo to get Link skinned, like Link armor and shield to use in the Switch version of Skyrim. Okay. Then they showed Dishonored DLC. Then they showed stuff for Quake Champions. Then they showed stuff for Evil Within. Then they showed footage for Wolfenstein. And again, all the footage of these was cool to see. And it granted one of my wishes, which is really a focus on showing gameplay rather than CG trailers. But maybe I should have been more specific in my wish, because I want to understand the gameplay that I'm looking at. I want to know what this experience is. And in the case of games that are like sequels or follow-ups or DLC to games that have come before, I want to know what are they doing that's different. As I look at this, I'm like, well, maybe they're not saying anything because nothing is different than what they've done in the past. And for me, that may be fine. I've really been enjoying Wolfenstein: The New Order. I haven't finished it yet, but seeing this game coming up, it makes me want to get back into The New Order and finish that up. And but I mean, it doesn't entice me as much as it could if I think if they would have told me more about what is new in these games? How are they innovating? What are they changing? What the new features are? Anything like that? Or just remind us, what the gameplay is like and why it's great and fun, why people have enjoyed it in the past. It was so odd. It was very short. I want to say that it was only about 40 minutes long. And someone did say, I saw a comment somewhere online that pointed out that Bethesda did call this a showcase and not a press conference. And so maybe, we should be a little bit more fair to them. And so I think that's worth noting. I'm still hoping, though, that maybe Sony paid big bucks to make an exclusive announcement of some Bethesda thing during their conference. I don't know. I'm a little bummed that there's not a little bit more for them to talk about and announce this year, given that they decided to do this live press event. So I really didn't get any of my wishes that were specifically for Bethesda. I did not get an Elder Scrolls 6 or even a hint that it's coming. I did not get Skyrim New Vegas, like some kind of a Skyrim engine game put out by Obsidian, kind of like a Fallout New Vegas. We did get Wolfenstein, but I didn't get any indication that it's going to be more open world type, an open world type game, or have more RPG type elements. So, but I mean, I think I'll still enjoy it. What I did get in my general wish list was short wait times. Everything that they talked about in their kind of press event is coming out in 2017. That's really cool. Always appreciate that. As I mentioned before, there were no CG trailers really that I recall. It was really focused on gameplay footage. So, despite not understanding what I was seeing all the time, I really appreciate the focus on gameplay footage. I didn't get my wish for avoiding, gimmicks or trend chasing. I do think that the VR thing is a bit of a gimmick and a trend right now. So I didn't get that, but oh well. They didn't spend a ton of time on it. Of course, they didn't spend a ton of time on anything. So after the disappointment of the Bethesda press conference, I was definitely looking forward to Devolver Digital's press event, which is being called a press conference, and you can go to their YouTube channel and check it out. I'll try to put a link in the description below. I would definitely recommend checking out their press conference if you have a dark sense of humor, if you don't mind some F-bombs being dropped repeatedly, I think. It's basically Devolver Digital is a publisher that really just focuses on indie games or really small games. So they only had, I think, about two games, maybe three in their quote unquote press conference to show video footage of. And I put that in quotes, the because it was a spoof. This was a spoof of E3 press conferences, the likes of which we've seen from, you know, big companies like Ubisoft and Microsoft and EA and Sony and stuff like that. They did a great job of spoofing. You just kind of like the kind of halted way of speaking that that often these kind of executives have or these developers have as they come out and talk about games and their plans. It's not very long. It's only about 15 minutes, and it's really funny. I sometimes wonder, are they being a little bit harsh? Are they going a little bit too far in trying to present themselves as the underdogs that aren't like those money-grabbing, you know, big publishers, you know? I don't know, maybe, you know, I'll let you decide what you think about that. But I did think that it was funny and suited my, you know, weird and dark sense of humor. So it was a nice way to end my evening, even if it only showcased, you know, a couple of games briefly, neither of which I'm happy into. They were both like top-down sci-fi type shooter games. You know, one was called Ruiner and the other was a Serious Sam game. And, you know, I'll probably, you know, look into those a little bit, but there's nothing that wowed me. It was more just kind of like this cool, weird celebration and at the same time criticism maybe of E3. I don't know. If you've watched E3 press conferences in the past, and as I said, have a dark sense of humor, don't mind some F-bombs, you might find this funny.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
This week at ChristianGeekCentral.com, you might have seen that the Summer of Free is partnering with the Retro Rewind podcast to present the Summer of Free Movie Club each month. During the summer, we're putting a spotlight on a free geek genre movie that you can watch for free and legally online, and then getting together to talk about it via Google Hangout. The movie being featured this month is 1984, which you can watch right now until the end of June on Vudu. Then, after you've had a chance to watch, you're invited to join the Google Hangout discussing the potential spiritual themes of the movie. That Hangout is going to be on Saturday, July 8th, starting at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, hosted by the Retro Rewind podcast. There is some, that time is subject to change. So what you want to do is register and get your free ticket, and then they'll keep you up to speed if there's any kind of changes that are made to that time. You can, let's see here, you can get the link to the free movie and to your ticket at ChristianGeekCentral.com, or it might be more easy to find at this point at SummerOfFree.com. There'll be fewer kind of posts to sift through. SummerOfFree.com would be a really easy place where you can get the link to watch 1984 and then the link to get your free ticket to that Google Hangout. At YouTube.com/ChristianGeekCentral this week, you should find 6 videos now, by the time this is published, covering my reactions to E3 2017 with tons of game footage along. So I'm talking about my reactions to it on the podcast this week, but you're not able to see any of the footage. So if you want to see any of the game footage of the stuff that I'm talking about, all that I try to really put up when it's relevant in those videos. So you can see for yourself what I've been talking about. Plus, posted late by accident, some problem with the settings of auto posting that I missed. There's the Christian Geek Radar segment that was featured recently on the podcast is now up in video format at YouTube.com/ChristianGeekCentral, where I take a look at the Holy Lands paper and pencil RPG. Then also this week, I put up part 4 of my series on the themes of Horizon Zero Dawn. There are, you know, plenty of spoilers in that series, so you might want to wait until after you've played through the main campaign of that video game. But once you've done that, or if you don't mind being spoiled, there is a lot, I feel like, to talk about and react to thematically in this game series. And this, in part 4, I talk about how the main character is a model of Jesus, or maybe I should say a model of how non-Christians might like to think of Jesus, as opposed to maybe, you know, how he is actually presented in the Bible. So, interesting stuff going on there. And then finally, Exposed by My Sister is part 6 of my Extra Life live stream series, where my younger sister, Corinne, comes to sit with me during the stream for a while, make fun of me, get scared by me, and in general, just reveal how messed up I am as a human being. So, all that for your enjoyment and edification at YouTube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. Let's see, what else? Okay, yeah, the only thing that's left is the secret thing. So this is the penultimate time that I will, if I'm using penultimate correctly, the second to last time that I'll be mentioning this. I'll mention it one more time on next week's show. But as I kind of wrap up celebrating the 10-year anniversary of Spirit Blade Productions, one thing that I want to do to just kind of, you know, mark that anniversary is less about like kind of celebrating something publicly with you guys and more about just something that I want to do for my wife. She is the reason, as I've mentioned previously, but in case you haven't heard this, she's the reason I'm able to do what I'm doing in the Ministry of Spirit Blade Productions and Christian Geek Central. What the kind of work that I'm doing is for a very niche crowd, and so that's not like it would be very hard for me to kind of monetize and kind of make a living off of this. So all of that has really been dependent upon Holly and her willingness to work in a job that really doesn't do anything in terms of personal fulfillment and is just kind of a drag a lot of the time and is, you know, tolerable, you know, at best. And she has actually entered into a season now where things are getting kind of difficult for her at work. There is, just as an update for those of you who know a little bit about that situation, there have been some positive changes that say, okay, well, maybe we'll be able to work around these problems and mitigate the issue a bit. So there definitely are some signs of hope, but it has been a bit of a difficult season for her right now. And so in the midst of that, I would just love for her to receive expressions of appreciation from those who have experienced something positive and meaningful as a result of their engagement with the content of Spirit Blade Productions or Christian Geek Central. So if Spirit Blade Productions or this podcast, the audio dramas or something about Christian Geek Central has been meaningful to you in some way or has meant something special to you, I would really love for Holly to hear from you about that, because she's the one that makes it possible, and I would love to just for her to get a lot of thank yous and appreciation for the vital role that she plays in making all this happen. So if you'd like to express your thanks to my wife Holly, you can send that to my email address, paeter@spiritblade.com. And then all at once, once the deadline is passed, I'm going to present those to her all at the same time. And these aren't going to be messages that I publish or, you know, make public anywhere. So if you'd like to share a story of a more personal nature, that it's safe for you to do that. It would just be me and Holly that would be reading that. So you could send that to my email address. Please do address her, though, as you write. PAETER@spiritblade.com. The deadline for that is Sunday, June 25th. So you have just over a week left. I'll remind you guys one more time on the show next week. So anyway, I would really appreciate that. And thank you so much to all those of you who have already sent in emails for me to give to her. That's really been great to get those. All right, let's move on. More E3 stuff. First, the PC gaming show. I only have a few thoughts about this. First, I love that they ditched the couch. It feels more like a press conference doing it this way, but I think that's a better fit for the host, who in previous years kind of projected still from the desk, the kind of the late show vibe they were going for. It didn't quite fit, I felt, with his projection style. And this was a nice halfway point between a more formal press conference and what felt to me like forced casual kind of mode that they were in the last 2 years. They would kind of sit on stools this time around, and so that was really nice. Intel sponsored the event this time instead of AMD, and because of the new format, when the Intel guy came out and kind of talked about the new tech that they're developing, it felt less out of place. It felt less kind of sneaky, like, we're trying to be casual, but hey, we're still going to sell you stuff, you know. No, this one was more like, yeah, we are going to give off a little bit more of a business vibe, and so it felt more natural when the guy came out to sell the new tech that they're working on. All right, on to the games. What jumped out to me? I am not a PC gamer, but I have a subscription to PC Gaming Magazine, and I like these conferences because often they will feature games that are going to still be coming out on console, but maybe don't get the stage time at the big Microsoft and Sony press conferences. So I get to kind of hear about them more and see what's coming up here. One game I'm not sure if it's coming to console, in fact there's no indication that it is Battletech. It's turn-based mech combat. It's based on the tabletop BattleTech game, and the game looks really cool. I don't know if they're going to bring it to consoles or not, but I really just like, I like tactical games. I don't play them all the time, but every once in a while, excuse me, I'll be in the mood for one. And this looks like one I could get in the mood for. Tripwire Interactive came by and they talked about Killing Floor and a new game that they're working on. And again, not my kind of games. I'm not into these pure action first-person shooters because I'm just terrible at them, especially if there's multiplayer. I'm just not a multiplayer guy. I like to get in my hermit hole and play my games all by myself without anyone intruding on my immersion. So this one wasn't really something that really jumped out to me. But I do like to kind of keep my eye on Tripwire Interactive. They are not a Christian company by any means, but John Gibson, the president of the company, is a Christian and will sometimes bring his faith into his decision making, such as using like hardcore Christian metal and rock bands and stuff like that for the soundtracks of Killing Floor. So I always like to see and try to support Christians doing work in mainstream entertainment media and doing that work with excellence. So I like to keep my eye on Tripwire Interactive. Summer Sideshow is the name of their like seasonal event that's going to be releasing soon, and there's a free week event that I think you can either play just that thing or maybe all of, I'm not sure. You can get the details if you go over to tripwireinteractive.com, I'm sure. But that event starts on June 13th on Steam. So, gosh, that starts now maybe by the time you see this. Griftlands. Now, I'm interested in this because it's billed as a sci-fi RPG, and I really love RPGs. It's from the makers of Don't Starve, and you can kind of tell it's got a similar kind of hand-drawn animation style, yet with a flash animation kind of vibe to how the things move around. It's going to be released in late 2017 or early 2018, and there was a very short glimpse, didn't get an idea of the systems and what kind of game it is, other than them saying it's a sci-fi RPG from the makers of Don't Starve, but, you know, it's one I'm going to keep my eye on. And then the last game that they announced, which may be coming to Xbox One, I'm not sure, but that's Age of Empires Definitive Edition. I'm typically not into real-time strategy games. I'm just dipping my toe in them lately with Dungeons 2 and kind of seeing, can I handle this or is it going to stress me out to not be able to pause and think, you know? This game has remastered visuals, remastered sound, improved gameplay, and it's going to be doing matchmaking on Xbox Live, which made me think, oh, does that mean it's coming to Xbox One and maybe eventually to PlayStation 4 or something? I don't know. Excuse me. But what came out in the conversation was that Xbox Live is also used to do matchmaking for PC gamers. So there may be no plans at all to bring it to any console. But anyway, it looks cool. The reason I'm not totally like going to keep my eye on it is because I don't think there's any magic in this one. I think maybe one of the spin-offs from the Age of Empires series had magic or mythical stuff going on, and that's kind of an ingredient I need to get into most games. Some kind of like sci-fi or fantastical or horror or crazy imaginative element. So, but anyway, I thought that was cool, and we'll see what happens with it. All right, Ubisoft. I've recently, in the last couple of years, become a fan of the Ubisoft style of game. You know, Far Cry and Assassin's Creed, they definitely have their differences, but they have a lot of similarities in terms of the overall structure of the game and what you do in the game. Climbing towers, opening up access to new areas that you can see, little activities on your map that you go and collect a bunch of things. And, you know, they're just the open world action game with some light RPG elements is just kind of their thing. And I've really been enjoying the Far Cry games and the Assassin's Creed games now recently. I've gotten into those. And so, more than ever before, I've always been kind of curious about Ubisoft every year, but this year I was actually like, I am excited to see what they are going to show. They didn't have Aisha Tyler this year. She's been hosting that event for I don't know how many years, and I liked her, but I actually was glad to see this new format because they used quick transitions with a lot less talking. Let's just get into the games, you know? First one they talked about was the Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle. This is a crossover effort between Nintendo and Ubisoft. It's going to be exclusively available on the Switch. It's a tactical adventure game of some kind. You adventure around and then stop, and the game switches modes into a tactical mode, and you have these tactical battles. It's kind of like Mario meets XCOM with these weird Rabbids characters. I don't know anything about that intellectual property. It's a Ubisoft thing. So anyway, it's coming out August 29th, 2017, and I can't imagine really caring about it. I do like tactical games, as I mentioned, but I just don't like the happy, fluffy whatever of of Mario. That's not really my thing. Let's see here. Assassin's Creed Origins, they also talked about. That's coming out October 27th, 2017. I already knew that from watching the Microsoft conference, but that does grant one of my wishes. I wanted a fall release for Assassin's Creed Origins, especially after learning that Far Cry 5 was going to be coming in early 2018. So woo freaking who, that's really cool. One of the developers that came up said, "We were fundamentally challenged to reinvent what it means to be an Assassin's Creed game." And they took an extra year off to kind of refresh the series a little bit. So we're going to see. The press conference gave very little time to it and almost no time to actual gameplay. They did have a 30-minute thing after the conference that I have not watched in its entirety yet, but I did watch just a few minutes of it. And from what I've seen, holy crap, they were not kidding at the Microsoft conference when they said that we were adding lots of RPG elements. There's like experience now, there's leveling, there's ability points, there's gear looting, and also like one of the people that was commentating talked about how you like can't necessarily insta-kill enemies as an assassin anymore. You have to specifically build your guy to function in that way. You have to build up his hidden blade skill or whatever. So I'm not sure how I feel about that, because I like playing, you know, recently I've been playing like a thief in Skyrim, but I miss, you know, that if I haven't built my guy up a little bit, I guess maybe I'm trying to do too many things at once, but I really like to be able to one-shot kill people and feel like an assassin, and I can't quite do that in Skyrim with the way I've built my guy. I don't want to end up, you know, playing an Assassin's Creed game where suddenly I realize, oh crap, I built my guy the wrong way, and now I can't one-shot kill anybody from far away, you know. So I'm a little bit nervous that might take, like, a core feel of the gameplay away from the Assassin's Creed series, but I'm probably still going to give it a shot. We'll see. They talked about The Crew 2, which is coming out in early 2018. I was curious about the first one. I never bought it, but this one is like open world vehicle racing. I don't know if racing is a part of it. That's the thing with Ubisoft in their conferences, is they have these trailers that will like cast vision for something, but and try to build hype, but they often don't get into the nuts and bolts of, okay, what is this game? How is it played? You know, what are the rules? And this one, I'm guessing there are races involved, but I don't know if you have to succeed at a certain number of races to unlock various parts of the world. It's an open world vehicle game where you can fly in planes, you can ride in boats, you can drive cars, you can ride motorcycles, I mean all kinds of vehicles all over the place, it looks like. But again, I don't know how open the world is, if I have to like unlock certain areas by being good at races. That would kind of like make it a no-buy for me, because I'm not necessarily good at racing games. I like Mad Max and just going around in the open world crashing into other cars and stuff like that. If they give me an open world vehicle game where I can just go wherever I want, do whatever I want, use whatever vehicle I want, and I don't have to win any races, I'll buy that game. I will buy that game. They talked about Skull and Bones. This is a fall 2018 online multiplayer seasonal pirate game spun off from Assassin's Creed. I do like Assassin's Creed as of late, but I am not at all interested in online or multiplayer, or really seasonal content necessarily. I don't know. We'll see. I'm trying that out with Diablo 3 in a little bit here. And I'm not really into pirates. I know a lot of people are into pirates. I don't get it. So this is not the game for me. It's also coming out in 2018, and that is definitely in violation of one of my wishes, and that is that games that are going to come out after next year's E3 don't even tell me about them. And they made the same mistake when they talked about Starlink Battle for Atlantis, another one coming out in fall 2018, involving strapping toy ships to your controller. And there's also going to be collectible physical and digital ships. I did like hearing that it's an open living star system, and it's going to be across all platforms, including the Switch, so it'll be interesting to just see how that pans out, but anyway. They showed a trailer and some gameplay for Far Cry 5, but didn't spend that much time on it. I was surprised. Maybe they just assumed that Assassin's Creed and Far Cry, we don't need to promote them much. People are going to buy them in droves. Let's not spend a lot of time on those. Maybe that's the thinking. It was a cool little new opening trailer. They showed the cult in this kind of like area of Montana. That's this cult that's taken over. They're having one of their psycho church services, and I guess they're singing Amazing Grace. And it'll be really interesting to see what they do. Ubisoft has a bit of a history with kind of taking some form of Christianity and twisting it. With the Assassin's Creed games, they twist and basically present this fiction where a bunch of the Bible is a lie and untrustworthy and it's a cover-up and all that kind of stuff. And now they're taking Christianity and they are twisting it into this weird kind of cult. Now, I think that they're, you know, to be fair, that they are differentiating between this cult, which is kind of spun out of and inspired by the most superficial elements of Christianity, and actual Christianity. There's a character that I've seen in other trailers who is an actual priest, or I don't know, he's wearing the collar because, you know, those are the guys that have real spiritual authority and, you know, whatever. They got the collars instead of the guys that, you know, I know, I'm not going to get into that. but anyway, I think they are going to have at least what they see as a representation of true Christianity in here. What will be interesting to me is what that brand of true Christianity is like. You can definitely plan on me reviewing this game or doing a first impressions review of some kind when it comes out. Man, there's so much more I could say on that. I don't want to say it right now. I'll wait until the game is released and there's a lot more buzz going on. But I did like what I saw of the gameplay. It looked like you have AI allies that you can give simple directions to. That sounds kind of cool. And then there's also co-op that I, from what I've heard elsewhere, you can play co-op all the way through the game. I don't think it's couch, though, which is a bummer for me. I wish it was couch co-op. I think it's just online. So anyway, yeah, Far Cry 5, looking great. Definitely planning on buying it. This footage didn't change my mind one way or the other. Finally, Ubisoft finished up their press conference with the reveal of Beyond Good and Evil 2. This is a sequel that has been long in development. I think it's had a bumpy ride, and there's just been kind of a cult following for this game that has really pushed to have Ubisoft make a sequel to this game, and apparently it is now happening. There is no release info given, though, so I'm like, come on, guys. This is not going to release until at least sometime after next year's E3, so again, why are you showing me this? Whatever. We got a CG trailer with talking animals, which I hate talking animals, but it's a cool-looking world. It's a very sci-fi and kind of Fifth Element inspired, with like flying vehicles and swarms of traffic and a chase amidst the flying traffic. You know, there are spiritual themes all over the place in this trailer. There's a kind of a gruff dealer at the beginning of the trailer who's trying to acquire an idol that he calls the Redeemer. I thought that was interesting. The heroes also fly past a giant idol of Ganesha, the Hindu elephant god, and the heroes are also revealed to be looking for Moksha. And after seeing it in a like a hologram, like, oh, there it is, there's our destination, Moksha, you know, she says true freedom lies beyond. Now in the game, Moksha seems to be a physical location they're trying to get to. In Hinduism, Moksha is the name for a final release from the cycle of death and rebirth. Excuse me, my phone's ringing now, bad timing. A developer says that the game takes place in a multi-ethnic, multicultural human society, and this was met with applause by the audience. Multiculturalism seems to be a high value of Ubisoft, and maybe also among many who play their games, I don't know. So far for me, in the Assassin's Creed games, they open every single one of them with a splash, or like a screen, before the game loads that says, inspired by historical events and characters, this work of fiction was designed, developed, and produced by a multicultural team of various religious beliefs and faiths. And I suspect they kind of do that to kind of like say, don't get mad for what we are going to do to Christianity in this game. and yet, despite whatever kind of a multicultural team they might have, they still, in those games, suggest only a single viewpoint regarding the historical Jesus, one that claims he was merely a human wielding a supernatural or sci-fi kind of gadget to do all of his miracles. So they definitely are not diverse in how they represent the truth claims of Jesus. Anyway, I'm in support, actually, of diversity, too. Cultural diversity, I think there's wonderful things that can be gained by us sharing the different aspects of where we come from. But I don't support the idea of kind of like diversity for its own sake, and just kind of propping diversity up as a value with no other purpose but diversity. And yet, diversity for its own sake is often a high value among those those with a relativistic worldview. I suspect that spiritual relativism is actually a common, maybe even a subtly dominating worldview among those that work at Ubisoft, even if they do come from different religious traditions or cultural backgrounds. And yet a religion like Hinduism is actually going to be favored under relativism. And you might say, well, why is that? That's because Hinduism has no single authoritative source, like scripture or creed, that all Hindus would say this is true. This is like these are the non-negotiables. There's no single authoritative source that claims truth, a document or a person or something like that. It's largely tradition and just kind of what you as the individual Hindu decide to make of it. And its influence in the United States played a huge role in kicking off the logically self-defeating worldview of relativism, which claims that there is no objective truth. What's true for you is true for you. What's true for me is true for me. Even if, you know, I say A is true and you say A is not true, you know, we can somehow, both are somehow true, or, you know, it's logically self-defeating. So the phrase beyond good and evil as the title for this game is actually very consistent with a relativistic worldview, because there is no belief in objective good and objective evil under that kind of philosophy. All of that together just says to me, boy, this seems to be an outworking of what I believe is the kind of influencing philosophy at Ubisoft. So it'll be very interesting to see what this game subtly or not so subtly promotes, you know, or maybe they're just going to play with the trappings of Hinduism. And but I don't know. The heroes are trying to reach moksha. That's their goal, a physical location, and that clearly seems to be symbolic of the Hindu goal to achieve or to reach moksha. I haven't played the first game in the series, but now in light of all this kind of philosophical stuff they seem to be playing with, and the various truth claims they might be making with the sequel, I'm very interested. I might go back and check out the first one. Maybe they'll do a remaster. Have they done one already? I have no idea. Am I talking too fast? Let me wrap this up. I'm very curious. I'll probably look into the first one a little bit more while I wait to see what kind of philosophy the sequel promotes. All right. Well, let's see. How did I do on my wish list? My Ubisoft wish list was very short. I only got one item on it, and that was the fall release for Assassin's Creed Origins. The other two things I wanted was assurances of some kind that there are no insta-fail missions in Far Cry 5, and the same thing to be true of Assassin's Creed Origins. Now, if Assassin's Creed Origins is going to much more of a action RPG type thing, like maybe a Horizon Zero Dawn thing, then I would guess those type of insta-fail missions will kind of fade. They'll use those less and less because those tend to be more action-oriented types of, mission type deals. Crap. I gotta wrap this up. I'm losing my words. I did get some nice short wait times for a number of games that were announced, but there were several other that was like, why are you telling me about this? I got some CG trailers with little or no gameplay to go along with them. So that wish didn't come true. Yeah, really most of my wishes were not granted for the Ubisoft conference. And yet, I come out of it kind of energized. I'm like, yeah, I'm still going to get to play Assassin's Creed Origins, and I'll probably like that. Still going to play Far Cry 5. That's looking like it's going to be fun. And The Crew 2 might totally be my kind of game. So I'm still, you know, feeling like I'm very interested in what they're going to be releasing. Just got done last night watching the Sony press conference. I watched the Nintendo event thing this morning, so I'm going to share my thoughts with you now. On both of those, Sony kicked off with an exclusive, Uncharted Lost Legacy. It's going to be coming out 8/22/17. I'm not really into that series of games, and so it doesn't really mean anything to me, but I imagine a lot of people will be excited about that. Then they showed the Horizon Zero Dawn, The Frozen Wilds, a trailer for that. That's an expansion to Horizon Zero Dawn. I really enjoyed that game. In fact, I'm doing a video series right now about the themes of Horizon Zero Dawn that you can check out on this channel at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. So I will definitely be picking that up at least at some point. After that, they showed more footage of Days Gone. This was more gameplay focused even than last year, at least in terms of kind of showing us what the gameplay might be like. It's still hard to get a sense of this. Is it kind of like an open world, post-apocalyptic, zombie slash survival? It seems to emphasize, in the same way that, say, The Walking Dead does, survival in the world, and the zombies are just kind of like a more of a force of nature than like the enemy. The real enemy, it seems, is largely going to be other humans, and the zombies are just kind of a major problem that everybody has to deal with. This is another exclusive for PlayStation 4, and I like the way that it's looking. If it's an open world kind of like survival type thing, I'm not particularly into zombies, but you know, I can imagine really enjoying this kind of gameplay if that's what it is. There did seem to be a lot of button prompts, like quick time event type things, and I'm not really into those. So we'll see if that kind of changes as the game, you know, continues development. There was also like some hiding in the bushes, you know, as a guy passes by, and then you throw rocks to distract them or send them off to your trap, and I just suddenly got a little bit of a vibe of, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn, you know. So, but maybe a lot of games are using those kinds of devices, and I've just happened to play Horizon Zero Dawn recently. But anyway, if it's anything like those kinds of open world, kind of like gathering, crafting, you know, kinds of games, I'll probably be into it. This was an interesting conference. There was just game after game after game. It seemed to be very similar to what Bethesda did. I mean, like the main dude, I can't even remember his name now, the main executive who runs the show, came out, I think, just twice. And other than that, it was just showing trailer after trailer. And I wonder if this seeming trend has anything to do with the fact that this is the first time at E3 that they are allowing just normal folk and not media or press people to come to the event. Now, the press events were still limited to media and press, as I understand. But like the show floor and stuff, normal people are able to buy tickets to that. So I'm wondering if there's any connection to this kind of approach for these press events, and the fact that they're allowing just kind of normal people off the streets to buy tickets and come into the show floor. I don't know. But anyway, I'm probably going to have to be digging around a lot more on videos that are recorded on the show floor with various media outlets that show gameplay and get into what these games are to find out what they are. Because normally in the past, they would show a little bit more, I feel like, about what gameplay is and explain gameplay a little bit more during these press conferences. But more and more with all these press events that are going out from these big companies, there's very little of that. They're just kind of showing game trailers. So that's an interesting approach. They did try to kind of like still, I don't know, class it up, make it artsy and interesting with like a waterfall thing at the beginning of Sony's conference. And then later on during the Days Gone thing, they showed that they had like Cirque du Soleil zombie performers like hanging from ropes and timing with the activity on the game footage. They started squirming around and stuff. It was really weird. Anyway, there was also another moment that kind of caught my attention. It was not had nothing to do with the presentation itself, but a couple of guys that were attending in the crowd, the camera showed them kind of doing this mock worshiping and bowing, you know, to express, you know, how excited they are and how much they love Sony and whatever. And those guys were just joking, of course, so I'm not pointing a finger at them or anything, but it was interesting. It was just kind of a sign of our times and how we express ourselves. We express ourselves so hyperbolically. You know, for a number of years now, we use a word like awesome, you know, or like that was amazing, you know. I mean, we use this kind of sarcastic, hyperbolic language to express things that, you know, we really think are cool. But then I wonder to myself, well, what words and what gestures are left when we want to express the nature of who God is and how mammoth, we have the mammoth-sized thoughts that we have to try and cram into our heads as we contemplate who he is, what he's done for us. Do we have any gestures? Do we have any language left? Or should we start thinking about reserving some language and some gestures for specifically when we're talking about these truly massive issues and the truly massive and infinite nature of God? I don't know. I mean, maybe there'll be other words. Maybe there already are, and I'm just not thinking of them right now. Other words and gestures and tones and stuff that come into play when we're doing that. But anyways, I saw that gesture. I thought about just kind of the nature of hyperbole and how that's kind of in and has been for a number of years now in the way that we express ourselves popularly. Just give me a moment to give me pause. But again, like, I'm not pointing fingers at those guys. I thought it was kind of funny, and I hope they're having a great E3. There was a kind of a neat moment of transparency from the main dude. Dang it, I could have told you his name 30 minutes ago. But he was talking about how we're going to provide the most diverse lineup of amazing games, da 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 da, you know. And then there was some kind of like reaction or something from the crowd, you know, and then he kind of broke from his script for a little bit and said, that's the plan, right? You know, and I just thought that was a nice moment of transparency. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, they make all these promises, you know, but life is life and things don't always work out. And so I just appreciated him breaking from that a little bit. And I also wonder if some of that will continue as this becomes less of a press event, E3 as a whole, and more of just like a normal, what expression should I use? Normal people? What are we? Are we civilians? No, I think press are still civilians. Whatever. You come up with a word and you fill it and re-edit my video for me. I'll just keep going with the idiot version here. So, next up, the thing that caught my eye was Monster Hunter World. I've been curious about this series, but it's been, you know, stuck on handheld systems that I don't have for a number of years. And but I'm interested in like the fighting, the looting, the hunting down, the crafting that's supposedly involved in this series. And so this is the first, I think, what could arguably be called proper main console, home console entry that the series has had in a number of years. And so it's coming early 2018. I'm interested in, based on, you know, what I've seen of the series in the past, but in this trailer, the monsters all kind of look like just mutated dinosaurs. And I just got done playing Horizon Zero Dawn. So like the idea of hunting things that kind of look like dinosaurs isn't as appealing to me right now. But anyway, I'll definitely keep my eye on it and hopefully I'll be able to learn more about the gameplay later on this week. Next, they show Shadow of the Colossus, which is a remake. They've done a remaster for this, I think, that was released on PS3. And this is another exclusive for the PlayStation 4. And this is like what looks like a complete remake. And I don't know if it's going to be my kind of gameplay. I'm guessing it might be too hard for me, but I have no idea. People seem to really dig this game, so, you know, I might try it out. Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, that's coming out September 19th, 2017, and doesn't do anything for me. It's a fighting game, and, you know, I don't need that. Call of Duty World War II, coming out November 3rd. Again, not really my kind of thing. Then they showed a God of War story-oriented trailer that really played up kind of the father-son angle again, so it's good to see that that's really going to be this consistent story element throughout the game. I can see myself totally being moved in one moment and then mashing buttons the next as I play this game. So I'm very curious as to how it's going to all come out in the end. They did show some gameplay, but there was still no user interface like icons or health meters or anything like that. So it's still very hard for me to get a sense of what kind of game this is, how much it's departing from what God of War has been in the past. And that's what I'm most interested in right now, especially since it's coming out early 2018. I'm like, come on, guys, I want to know. You should be able to tell me right now what kind of game this thing is. And maybe there's going to be more videos, gameplay videos, that'll show up throughout the week. So we'll see. But that's another exclusive for PlayStation 4. And then the next one that caught my attention was Detroit Become Human. Oh, man. I don't think I'm going to be able to get into this game. I feel like I've talked about this a lot, so I will try to put one or more videos in the description below that you can go to get my thoughts on AI, how it's used in stories, and why I have problems investing in AI characters as people, as real persons that have the same worth and value as human beings. I just have trouble doing that, and I think it directly is a result of my worldview, and the fact that I think that you can get into AI stories and not be bothered in the way I am and still, you know, not be a naturalist. But that is just, you know, the fact that I am not a naturalist. And I do believe, at least in the duality, both a non-physical and a physical vital components, both to what the human being is. Because I believe in those, and because those thoughts stay in my mind, and I'm not able to successfully kind of suspend my disbelief and set those aside, I have trouble with AI stories where I'm supposed to really care about this toaster and this cell phone and the feelings that this cell phone has. No, it's my cell phone. I bought it. Or if I was the guy who invented it and made it, I would say, I made you, cell phone. You are mine. You don't get to go and be a person, okay? I made you. You know? So, anyway, I'll try to put some links in the description below this video on YouTube so that you guys can check out my thoughts and hear me blab more on that. You know, they really play up the idea that you can create your own story with this game. I don't think they're really going to let me create my own story, because my story involves some, you know, just some worldview beliefs that are not going to be compatible with what they're trying to do here. Maybe if I can play as a psychotic malfunctioning droid, they'll let you. Their big thing with this trailer trailer was they'll let you choose to go be violent or be a pacifist. And so choosing the violent path, I suppose in my mind I could say to myself, I'm choosing violence every single time because I'm a malfunctioning droid, I'm not a real person, you know. But I don't think that's the creator's intent. So anyway, no release date for that one. It is an exclusive for PlayStation 4. So there you have it. Destiny 2, September 6th is coming out. They plugged that and they spent some cash to get some exclusive stuff. Good job. And then they showed Spider-Man at the very end. And I'm not sure, this is an exclusive to Sony. And I'm not sure, is this an open world, like an open city game? There were a lot of QuickTime event type button prompts. And lots of set piece sequences, you know, these kind of really cinematic type things that you're just kind of watching. And then all of a sudden it'll say, press L1 now, press L2 now, do it really fast, both sides. And I'm not into that. That really just makes me feel like less like I am controlling the character and more like I'm just trying to do this little puzzle game really fast in order to advance the video sequence that I'm being shown. You know, I don't feel with those QTE type button prompt things that I am actually in the action. You know, I feel like I'm watching it, and then if I want to keep watching it, got to do this button press in the right sequence at the right time fast enough, you know. So that's not fun to me. That was kind of disappointing, honestly. I was hoping for more of a just an open world, open city type Spider-Man game. Maybe we will get that. Maybe when you're not doing these kind of sequenced events, it is more open world. I just need to see a lot more. It's coming out in 2018. Who knows when in 2018? Maybe all this, you know, button prompt stuff is just some temporary measures so that they can show us footage from the game, you know. But the control scheme is actually going to be very different. And in which case, it's probably coming out very late 2018. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, I did note that there were five hard exclusives for Sony. And there were three of them that may be interesting to me. Days Gone, there's a good chance that that I'll buy that at some point if it is the type of game I think it is. God of War, I'll very likely buy. And then Spider-Man is kind of like a big maybe at this point. All right, so looking at my wish list for Sony, I mostly did not get my wishes granted. I did not get a Horizon Zero Dawn sequel with a new protagonist. I got a DLC with the same protagonist. It's probably got the same chip on her shoulder and is just going to be kind of annoying to listen to. I did not get Snowblind games or the Shadow Hearts games on PlayStation Network. I didn't think I was going to get that. I did not get PlayStation 2 disc-based backwards compatibility. Did not think at all I was going to get that. I did not get any God of War game systems info. As I mentioned earlier, I was really wanting to know, is this going to be more of like an open world action RPG, or what is this thing? And I really didn't get that this time. I didn't get any news that Path of Exile will eventually be coming to PlayStation 4, as it is coming to Xbox One. What I did get was a real focus on games. I really appreciate, you know, how many games they showed, their focus on games, instead of talking about tech and hardware and sales. I think we're probably going to be less about tech and hardware and sales going forward as this E3 becomes less and less of a press thing and more of a public thing. Public, that's right, we're the public. Is that the word? Dang it, go back and we can... All right, let's see. So there was a nice moment of transparency that What's His Dude had, and you can fill in that too. Now that we have public figured out, you can fill in What's His Dude's name once you Google and figure that out. So yeah, that my nice moment of transparency was like, well, this is the plan, right? You know. And then they also gave me a weird entertainment moment to talk about with the hanging zombie acrobats. What the crap? So anyway, yeah, not a bad show. Didn't give me a lot of things I wanted. Retrospectively, I wish they would have showed Dragon Quest XI and an announcement that that was going to be released in the US. But I held out hope after that. I was like, well, maybe Nintendo will show that. That would be really cool to announce the Dragon Quest XI coming to the West. So what did I think of Nintendo? Well, this was an interesting little kind of like video thing. It's like their Nintendo Direct pre-edited thing, not a live event, and they put it out. And Reggie Fils-Aimé comes out. I remembered his name. Why don't I remember the other dude's name? And he comes out, and it felt like, to me, you watch it, and let me know what you think, because maybe you have a very different impression from me. But it reminded me of like clips of like these new age self-help type videos that, you know, you would see in like, I want to say like the 90s maybe, or like if you've ever seen, this is a really like deep cut reference, but like Carl Sagan's thing where he's on the he's sitting on a rock or something like that, and the waves of the ocean are in the background, and he's like, "The cosmos is all that ever is and ever was and ever will be." And you know, he's a naturalist, obviously. But anyway, it felt like some kind of weird pseudo spiritual type thing. He comes out and he's like, "The game is fun. The game is a battle." It was this weird scripted kind of thing. If it's not fun, why bother? If it's not a battle, where's the fun? Which I'm like, I don't know, a lot of people like puzzle games. And he's talking about how the game is a journey, a passport to new worlds. And then at the end of that segment, he says, "Close your focus and open your mind." What the crap? And then later on in the whole video thing, he says that video gaming itself, he says, "If gaming is a journey, then its destination is blah, 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 E3, blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, gaming is a journey? I understand that like one particular game that's about a quest would be, you know, a journey, but how is gaming itself as a hobby, how is that a journey? So it seemed to be, I don't know how serious they were with this. I really doubt they were. I think they were just trying to do something interesting and artistic and stuff. But the content itself, you know, could arguably be giving weight to video gaming as a hobby that video gaming as a hobby should not have. You know, we should not be looking to video games for these kind of like weighty and significant experiences with kind of a spiritual vibe and stuff like that. That's not to say that God cannot use or Satan cannot use video games to communicate ideas that have a spiritual impact on us. So that's not to rule them out in that way, but I don't think that they're like the go-to place. And by their very nature, this is what they are: is these kind of like spiritually attuned experiences. I don't know. It was more of a vibe that I got from it than like the than really something that felt strongly put out there by the content itself. But I would encourage you to just check it out and see what your impression is, and then let me know in the comments. All right, so Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is coming out holiday 2017. This also had some interesting kind of spiritual ideas being attached to it that they're at least playing around with, if not like overtly stating. And that's actually very common in Japanese RPGs, and I think you see it in some anime as well, where they're just kind of playing around with these ideas. And it's like, well, is there a message here that you're really being trying to be intentional about, or are you just playing around on a like a academic level, you know, that really isn't trying to say anything, and therefore, ooh, isn't that profound? That that's very postmodern, maybe. I don't know what the intent is there, but you know, they say that the voiceover says everyone in the world used to live in the world tree, which is also known as paradise, which is also called Elysium, and that's actually from ancient Greek religion and philosophy. It's like the pleasurable afterlife of Greek tradition. And everyone used to live in Elysium with their divine father, the architect. And so it's, you know, definitely they're playing around with some kind of like spiritual ideas. But again, that's very common in JRPGs. May not necessarily be doing anything really overt, but you know, we'll see. As far as like for my gaming tastes, hey, it's an action, a Japanese action RPG. Great, good job, Nintendo. That's one. That's one. Maybe they've got a couple others, but I mean, for my particular tastes, one JRPG that may or may not even be good is not going to be enough to really sell me on the Switch. Then they showed Kirby. A Kirby game is coming out in 2018. When did he become pink? I remember the first Kirby game on Game Boy, where he was not shaded gray at all to indicate that he had a color. He was white. He was white on the cover of the box. At some point, they made him pink. Whatever, I don't know. I'm not a Kirby fan anyway, so why am I complaining? There was a nice moment in where a developer came out and just talked about when he found out that the Switch was a big success. He said, "I was so relieved." And I thought, wow, that's kind of a neat little moment of humility. And I think that there's a sense in which humility is a big part of Japanese culture, and yet there's also this pride, this really strong pride that's part of Japanese culture as well. And it's weird, but I mean, we are inconsistent creatures as human beings, you know? But it was just kind of an interesting thing that I noticed. Yeah, and even just in Nintendo as a company, you know, I see some of this, you know, humility from the developers and stuff, and then what seems to be such a mercenary policies when it comes to how they protect their intellectual properties, and tight-fisted maybe is the better word than mercenary. Anyway, but I did appreciate that moment there. There's a new core Pokemon RPG title in development. It may not release for more than a year, but I think they wanted to put that out there. I think they probably knew that fans wanted that, and they wanted to let fans know as early as possible, yes, we are committing to this. We have heard you. Likewise, Metroid Prime 4 is in development, another thing that fans, I think, have really wanted. And so I think that was probably good news for a lot of Nintendo fans. And then there's a Yoshi game that's coming out in 2018. It's kind of a sequel to Woolly Yarn or whatever the crap. I think my boys would really like this game. And when I saw that, I was like, yeah, if there was going to be a reason for me to buy a Switch, that would probably be it, to get it for my boys. And then just as a bonus, maybe now and then I would buy a game for myself that I can play when they're in bed. So that looked like, you know, kind of cool. Then there's Fire Emblem Warriors. That's another kind of like, I don't know if that's a, the Fire Emblem series is like a strategy, tactical kind of RPG thing, I think. I'm not sure what this thing is experience exactly is going to be. And let's see, what else? There's some Breath of the Wild, Zelda, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild expansions that are coming out, so I think that'll probably please Zelda fans quite a bit. They're still doing the Amiibo thing. They're doing some tournaments at E3, so I think they're trying to engage. That's another indicator. I think they're trying to engage with what they view as the core gamer. So esports is kind of a thing, you know, among a number of core gamers, or at least a section of core gamers. And then the way that they're listening to fans and doing the Pokemon thing and the Metroid thing, I think that's that was part of their plan with this press event, is to put out there, hey, we're listening, we're trying to do things for mainline core gamers. Then they showed the Mario Rabbids thing. I talked about that with my reactions to Ubisoft. And let's see, Rocket League is coming to Switch. Holiday 2017, it's going to have all the features, cross-platform play, so you can play with players that are playing on PC or PS4 or whatever. And then it's also going to have some exclusives for Switch owners only. And then lastly, they finished up talking about Super Mario, not talking about, showing a trailer and gameplay footage from Super Mario Odyssey. That's coming out October 27th. And so I'm like, wow, it must be the show floor where they're showing more of the nuts and bolts of this kind of game. It has to be. So again, I felt like Nintendo was going this route of largely showing games and not kind of talking about the mechanisms of the games. They would have guys come out and say things, but it wasn't really about like, this is, you know, how this game works. You know, it wasn't that kind of talk. Let's look at my wish list now. I did not get any indication of a change in their tight-fisted YouTube policies, although they get a little bit of credit if you didn't see any ads with this video. I didn't get Zelda Maker. I still think that would be an awesome idea after Super Mario Maker. Didn't get that. Didn't get anything about the eShop. Anything about, like, retro Nintendo games that are going to be available through the virtual console in the future or through their eShop. I'm like, what? Come on. What is going on, guys? That's like a gold mine for you. And then, although not on my wish list specifically for Nintendo, I thought, man, Dragon Quest XI, if it's going to get announced at E3, it'll probably be announced on the stages or the events of one of these big companies like Sony or Nintendo, and it hasn't been announced for either one. And so I'm wondering if it's just not coming right now. If it's not coming until a long time from now, which would be a real bummer. They tested the water with Dragon Quest Builders and Dragon Quest Heroes. I think those games have been received well, so maybe Square Enix is going to still announce it later on this week at some other kind of little press event or, you know, whatever. But we didn't get it this time. Oh, well, I did get some small hope that they're listening to fans through their announced Pokemon RPG and Metroid Prime games that are coming out. So there is hope. I did get one of my wishes granted. Well, I'm ready to wrap up my thoughts on E3 2017. I spent a couple of days just kind of scouring the internet for all of kind of like the gameplay videos and news announcements and stuff that I could get my hands on to kind of soak up as much as I could. And here are my final thoughts and highlights, including my hidden gems from E3 2017 that you might have missed. Starting off with Monster Hunter. I already commented on this a little bit. It's coming in early 2018, but I found out a little bit more information that says to me, this could very well be absolutely my kind of game. I don't have any experience with the games in the series, but looking at it now, it's going to have more of a single-player focus than the series has typically had in the past, which is totally my thing, and it's got a dynamic ecosystem that the monsters are living in, and they're preying upon each other, and they can look at a situation that you're in the middle of and choose a side, as it were, and kind of like jump into the fray. And there's a day-night cycle that changes their behavior. The focus on this game, the basic gameplay loop, as I understand it, is finding resources, using them to craft new weapons and armor, tracking down monsters, and killing them to get their stuff, their skins or whatever the crap, and rinse and repeat until you take on, I don't know, I guess all the monsters that you can handle. So anyway, I think based on the further information I've kind of gotten about this series and this particular game, it could be totally right up my alley. So I'm definitely looking forward to checking out Monster Hunter World in early 2018. Maybe the biggest surprise for me in terms of, something that like I'm excited about that was not even on my radar before E3 2017 began is Ubisoft's The Crew 2, which is coming in early 2018. I'm not in particular I'm definitely not a car guy. I don't like going to car shows, or I don't know anything about auto mechanics. I'm not that guy. But I've discovered in open city games like the Saints Row games and Watch Dogs 2, as I've been playing that, and Mad Max, that I kind of enjoy just ripping around in a vehicle and just kind of smashing into things on purpose or usually by accident, and just having a grand old time, navigating whatever environment I'm in. And that's really what this game is going to be all about. As I learned more about it, the original game, The Crew, was focused more on traveling on roads, and it wasn't open. It was gated by a lot of races that you had to win at or whatever. And that really tends to be an annoying part of the way Ubisoft makes their games, is they have these big wide open game worlds in their games, but then there'll be certain sections of them that are gated that you can't get to until you've accomplished some certain story mission. Well, they have listened to their fans, at least on this game, and hopefully they'll do it for the Far Cry 5 and Assassin's Creed Origins as well. And they have just made the entire world open from the get-go, and also you don't have to compete in races in order to unlock things, which I understand would be like new vehicles, and other little bells and whistles that you can play with. But the world itself is open from the get-go, and anywhere your vehicle can take you, you can go. And there are like four different paths of involvement that you can engage in order to kind of unlock things, gain points, or whatever the progression point system is, experience or whatever, I don't know. But the different types are, let's see, street racing, pro racing. So street racing is just on city streets. Pro racing is on like professional tracks. Freestyling, which I'm not sure what that means, maybe like ramps and stunts and stuff like that. Or exploring. So in other words, that last category means that you can progress through the game unlocking things simply by basically going places, it sounds like. You can also, and I didn't believe this at first, I had to have it confirmed, you can switch between vehicle types at the press of a button. So that means that you can ramp off the top of like some multi-story parking garage and then midair switch to a plane and fly for a bit and then fly over the water and then switch to a boat and you'll drop down, hit the water running, and in a speedboat. And then also there's this crazy, nonsensical Inception-type reality bending where like half the city can start like turning up on its edge into a 90-degree angle, and you can just race right up that or find yourself like on the slope and then having to go down. And then, I mean, it's crazy. I don't know what is going on there. In the interviews, they didn't provide a story justification for it. They were just like, because it's cool, you know? So, normally I'm only into games that have some kind of what I would call a nerd genre or geek genre element. So sci-fi, fantasy, horror, something fantastical. And so normally I wouldn't be into a game like this, but there's just enough kind of gamey things going on that it feels like a kind of a nerd fantasy. I'm turn into any vehicle man, and I'm flying and driving around a twisty, bendy Inception style world. Hey, that's whatever. It doesn't have to make sense. I'm just going to enjoy playing in that, I think. The question for me will be, will I enjoy the vehicle control? Because I've only basically played Watch Dogs 2 and had the experience with the vehicles there, and I don't like that control for the vehicles as well as, like, say, for the Saints Row games or for Sleeping Dogs. So that's still a big question in my mind. The other big question in my mind was, can you play this game offline? And no, you can't, which was kind of a bummer to me. I really prefer solo experiences so that Monkey Dookie 698 is not going to be ticking me off and ramming into me or blocking the thing that I'm interested in doing or whatever. So that's a little bit frustrating, but from what I can tell, you don't actually need a PS Plus membership. I have no reason to have a PlayStation Plus membership because I just don't play online games. And it's like, crap, is this really going to be like behind a paywall basically just to play the game at all? And from the research that I've done, from the best I can tell, you don't. You'll still be in an online persistent world that will have other players, you know, that are driving around you and stuff and can potentially knock into you and stuff. But you won't be able to participate in any races or team up with anybody, which is fine by me. So this is actually a game that I might be willing to try playing online, even if I got to drive around with Monkey Dookie, just so that I can enjoy all that the game world has to offer. So I'm not, you know, it's not an insta-buy for me, but I'm definitely strongly going to be considering The Crew 2. I didn't get much more information about Metro Exodus 2018 than what we already saw and what I picked up just from watching the demo at the Microsoft press conference. It's coming out in 2018. It was described in a developer walkthrough as survival sandbox, which was interesting to me because I'm only about halfway through maybe the first of the, you know, two Metro games that have been released already. And I wouldn't describe it as a sandbox game. It's more of an atmospheric, kind of like Bioshocky type, except it's, you know, harder, ammo is more scarce, and it's easier to die for me. So it may be that this series is going to be too difficult for me to consistently enjoy. It'll just be too intense of an experience than what I want when I'm just relaxing at the end of my workday. But what I'm going to do, because I love sandbox games, is continue playing through the Metro games that I have and see if that'll help me make my decision on whether or not I'm going to pick up Metro Exodus when it comes out. It comes out sometime in 2018. The PlayStation 4 Spider-Man game, I had some serious reservations about during the footage we saw at the conference because it looked full of QuickTime button prompts, and I am not into that. What I wanted was an open city Spider-Man game. Well, during a developer walkthrough on, I think, a Sony stage or somewhere, it was confirmed by the developers to be an open world game outside of the main missions. So this game is now officially back on my radar. It's definitely not one that I'm going to insta-buy, and I wouldn't even say that I'm like excited for it yet, because what I've found in some open world games is it can be really frustrating to have story missions that have like a totally different play style than the open world activities. And that can almost be enough in some cases to suck the fun out of me, or at least make me suck the fun out of the experience for me. Excuse me. I guess it kind of sucks the fun out of me. I'd probably be a grumpy guy to sit next to when I'm having those experiences. But I mean, bad enough that I'd be like, you know what? I'm putting this game away for a while, you know? And I don't like that. I don't like to be frustrated enough with a game that I'm putting it away for a month or two. So anyway, but it is at least back on my radar because of the confirmation that it is, in fact, outside of the story missions, an open city Spider-Man game. Could be very cool. Okay, now I want to talk about my hidden gems, the video games that I saw, maybe knew about going into E3, maybe didn't until I started looking at E3 coverage, but that didn't get coverage kind of like on the big show, the big stage shows and stuff like that. The first one is Agents of Mayhem. This is coming out soon. It's coming out August 15th in the United States and on August 18th in Europe. And this is made by the people who did the Saints Row games, which I've already referenced. So I am a fan of Saints Row 2 and 3 and much of 4, although it's a very different kind of game, and they take a lot of the superpower elements from 4 and they are just running with it in this game, where you can you can make a squad, or is it a squad when there's just 3, or do you have to have 4 for a squad? Anyway, you have a team of 3 of these agents of mayhem that are going out and trying to stop this other diabolical evil team or whatever. I think it's called Legion. And you can take 3 agents out into the city at a time, but you only control one at a time, and they kind of like swap. So like the others are in some kind of digital limbo, I guess, and then at the press of a button, you can swap out one of those 3 agents, and each has their own unique powers and abilities that are useful to the situation at hand. And, you know, the way that you load out your team of 3, you know, might be dependent on how those abilities interact with each other when you alternate back and forth really quickly, and given the situations that you're in. So it sounds like there's some, you know, cool action RPG type gameplay, and also some like bigger picture zoomed out kind of strategy in terms of how you select your team members for a mission, and then also just like the crazy off the wall humor of the Saints Row games can really be funny, especially when they play to some of like the retro, you know, elements from, you know, that like people, I guess, of my generation would know about. The humor can be a little bit crass sometimes, and you know, that's that can be a, you know, a bummer of a thing, but I think I'm really going to enjoy it. If my history with the games is any indicator, I think by and large, the good things are going to far outshine, in my experience, the things that I don't like as much. So, yeah, looking forward to Agents of Mayhem on August 15th. Vampire is a game coming out in November 2017. This game was not on my radar, really, until I started looking at it at E3. The description, I still don't know very much about it. The description from the developers reads, London, 1918. You are a newly turned vampire, Dr. Jonathan Reed. As a doctor, you must find a cure to save the city's flu-ravaged citizens. As a vampire, you are cursed to feed on those you vowed to heal. Will you embrace the monster within? Survive and fight against vampire hunters, undead skull, and other monstrosities. Use your unholy powers to manipulate and delve into the lives of those around you to decide who will be your next victim. Struggle to live with your decisions. Your actions will save or doom London. In gameplay, you have to feed, basically, to become stronger, which is going to help you progress through the game. But this results in killing people, which as a doctor, you're going to be totally against. And so the game is largely about making these difficult decisions of who am I going to feed on, you know? What kind of person am I going to choose to feed on? And since I suck at games and I'm going to be looking for every advantage I can find to get through a game like this, I'm going to violate the crap out of my Hippocratic Oath if I play Vampire. But I love the idea that there's this cost involved in the simple choice of feeding as a vampire in a video game. I'm hoping that the combat, that the powers that you can gain and develop, that the progression and upgrade systems are all cool and satisfying. So I definitely want to know a lot more than I know now, but Vampire, coming out in November 2017, is definitely on my radar. LX, coming out October 17th, is one that I remember seeing a little bit of, I think, last year at E3, and then I totally forgot about it again. So I know very little. There's still very little that's been revealed about this game, apart from what looks like a visually interesting world and the ingredients of kind of post-apocalyptic-ish sci-fi mashed up with fantasy. So there's like, you know, like missiles and bombs and stuff, and also like magic spells, and it's an open world RPG, like third-person action type RPG. There's some stiff, like, jumping animations in some of the gameplay videos that I've seen. I'm like, I don't know. And that kind of gives me pause. But I can forgive a lot, personally, visually, if the gameplay systems are enjoyable. So, you know, if you let me explore and loot and upgrade, I usually don't need a whole lot more. That can be a very satisfying experience all by itself. So unless pre-release reviews are universally terrible, I at least want to give LX a try when it comes out October 17th. And the final hidden gem on my radar is called Kingdom Come Deliverance. This one's coming out February 13th, 2018. It used to use, during, I think it's Kickstarter, the tagline, Dungeons, No Dragons. And it's been compared to Skyrim. It's a first-person medieval RPG, but with no magic. Instead, emphasizing other, you know, detailed systems that are simulating the historical environment and the historical day-to-day, you know, kind of activities. Elements like medieval weaponry, armor, and melee combat. Where you have armor on your body is, like, that's a major factor. And, like, how heavy your armor is going to block your line of sight. If you have, like, a helmet with a visor, that's going to block your visibility quite a bit as a player, and then also I think how you can move and stuff. So it's really trying to simulate a lot of those kinds of down and dirty physics of like living in a cruddy medieval world, and it also has detailed charisma and interaction systems and reputation systems. It does have a few video gamey fantasy elements like potions, and there is a skill in there called alchemy, which makes me think, okay, are we going to be trying to turn lead into gold here? Are we going to succeed in that? Is that a thing? Or visually, I got to say, it looks a little bland, but that's in part maybe due to its realistic setting. It'll just be interesting to see how it ultimately comes out. It is being made by a very small team, so I'm not expecting AAA visuals. The combat, though, is what maybe concerns me a little bit, because in previews, it seems like it might be pretty hard and unforgiving, and I don't have good reflexes or like hand-eye coordination or really fast response time. I'm just not that kind of player at all. So in this world, like, they say if you break a finger, you're kind of like a dead man because of how that's going to affect your... You won't be able to wield a sword if you break, you know, your fingers. But there are also supposedly a much greater variety of ways to complete quests compared to, say, a game like Skyrim, allowing for non-combat solutions, I think, much more frequently, if not all the time. Like Skyrim, though, skills develop by practicing them, by using them. So the developers say it's worth trying all kinds of approaches to different quests in order to develop your character. I almost always need, as I mentioned earlier, some element of the fantastic to enjoy a video game, but this game may be my second rare exception, along with The Crew 2. This could be absolutely the wrong game for me, but I'm very curious and I want to give it a try because of what it could end up being for me. So again, that's Kingdom Come Deliverance, releasing February 13th, 2018. All right, I just want to fly through really fast the results of my wishes, which ones were granted, which ones weren't. Actually, I'm just going to give you some highlights. This list is way too long. I had 13 granted out of my 45 wishes. All 7 of my most anticipated games this year, which I'll talk about at the end, are coming in 6 to 9 months. That's like amazing to me. There were some great moments of transparency from both Sony and Nintendo presentations, so that was a nice wish granted. Another wish that I did not think would be granted was games featuring and emphasizing couch co-op and a reason to have people over and to offer hospitality in bringing people into your living space, into your home to spend time with you. I think that's something, if we can encourage more of that, especially as Christians, that's something that we really want to be about. So there's A Way Out, which is a really cool looking game about two guys that agree to work together in order to escape a prison. And then there's also Hidden Agenda, which I found about a day or two later. This is a game where you are playing two characters that are investigating you're trying to track down a serial killer, but the decisions that are being made in the game can be made with, I think, up to 4 players other than yourself, maybe, so like a total of maybe 5 people sitting down and playing this game and helping to make decisions. It's made by the people who made Until Dawn, and so it's largely a story-based game that you're kind of like choosing your own adventure as you go through it. That's kind of like the level of involvement. I don't know how much controlling of the avatars on screen you're actually doing, but given that it's not a fantastical genre story, it's just like a crime story, I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, people that like aren't geeks, aren't hardcore gamers, aren't used to all the weirdness that can come in thematically with video games, but maybe they watch CSI, you know, they might be into this, you know. So I could almost imagine sitting down actually with my wife and my parents playing a game like this, and they would totally be into it, you know. So anyway, I think this could actually be, going with the whole serial killer angle, could be that perfect meeting point that I couldn't imagine what it could be between the hardcore gamer and the non-gamer or the casual gamer who maybe is into some TV shows but isn't going to be into crazy weirdness, you know. Same thing could be said for A Way Out, where it has kind of like this gritty story to it. You know, isn't there a show called Prison Break that was pretty popular? I don't know. I didn't watch it. But, I mean, I can see how these could be really great meeting points between hardcore gamers and casual or non-gamers. So yeah, really, really cool. Hopefully both of those games are really successful and we'll see more games that encourage actually socializing in person with other people and practicing hospitality. Such a cool thing. Okay, I'm going to go much faster on the rest of these. The next wish granted was entertainment, and not a ton of really interesting entertainment, but man, that the hanging Cirque du Soleil zombies during the Sony conference has to count for something. That was crazy. There was no Bridging the Gap really between to the PC from Xbox on Xbox's part, so that was not granted. There was no announcement or word of Elder Scrolls 6. In fact, there was a little confirmation a couple days later from some media outlet that, in fact, yes, currently there is still no development whatsoever being done on Elder Scrolls 6. So that was a bummer. No Zelda Maker being announced. I didn't get my favorite games on the eShop. In fact, Nintendo said nothing about the eShop. Does the eShop even exist anymore? You Nintendo fans, have you checked? My gosh. There was no BioShock 4 announced, no Singularity 2 announced, no Open City single player DC Universe / Justice League of America action RPG announced, no new Snowblind style action RPG announced, Pillars of Eternity 2 is not coming to console as far as I know, there was no Bloodstained or Symphony of the Night clones with release dates for 2017 announced. Oh man, this was maybe a big one. No Dragon Quest XI announcement for release in the US. I really kind of thought it was going to happen. I really kind of thought it was going to happen. And it never happened. I'm baffled. They brought over 3 games to the US that are based in the Dragon Quest world. but not this mainline. There's no indication that this mainline Dragon Quest game is, I don't know, maybe they're going to see if they can milk people for the second Dragon Quest Heroes game. Has that released yet? I think it has. I don't know what they're waiting for. Anyway, all right. And then the last one was a wish that did get granted, and that was just some new RPGs to get announced, and I definitely felt like Alex kind of fit the bill on that one, and maybe something else I mentioned. I don't know. My brain is so fried, I can't remember what I've talked about. Despite having relatively few of my wishes granted, I've got to say, this E3 left me with more games I'm looking forward to in the near future than any E3 I can remember. It was really kind of shocking to me as I kind of thought about, oh man, I'm kind of disappointed, but wait a minute, holy crap, as I started counting up. So let me tell you about my most anticipated games coming out of E3 2017. The first one is Agents of Mayhem, that's coming out again in August, and I'm definitely looking forward to that. I've already said a little bit about that. The next one that's coming out, this will be actually the very first of my most anticipated game that's released, is Final Fantasy XII, The Zodiac Age. I loved this game on PlayStation 2, not as much the first time I played it. The second time I played it years later, I was like, this is amazing. Why didn't I think this was amazing the first time I played it? And I'm very much looking forward to playing it again. It's possible that, you know, I'll get 10 hours into it and say, yep, I remember all this. I don't need to play anymore. But there's a part of me I think there's an equal chance that I will just totally get absorbed in it all over again because I love the combat system in that game. It's the same kind of real-time with pause combat that I love from Dragon Age Origins and Neverwinter Nights and Pillars of Eternity. It's very similar to those real-time with pause systems. And all the manipulation you can do of the artificial intelligence of each of the characters in your party, I mean, there's just so much going on in that game. You can count on me doing a video about that game when it comes out. So very much looking forward to that. Then a big surprise, The Crew 2. Very good chance that I'll be buying that. I'm not for sure on that, but very good chance that I'll be buying that. It looks like it could totally be a blast. LX, I already mentioned. I'm very curious about that one. Just looking forward to an open world action RPG in any kind of sci-fi genre, even if it's split between sci-fi and fantasy. Outside of Fallout, it's not very often we get an open world RPG in the sci-fi genre. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. Now, the three that I would say I'm most looking forward to would be the Horizon Zero Dawn expansion. Yeah, I've got my issues with Aloy, but I really enjoyed the gameplay of Horizon Zero Dawn. And so I'm definitely looking forward to an excuse to get back in there and build up my levels in all the different parts of the world that I haven't cleared out yet so that I can take on whatever the big badness is that's coming with the DLC expansion. Very much looking forward to that. And then the two games that I'm most looking forward to as coming out of E3 are the two games I was most looking forward to seeing more of going into E3. That's Far Cry 5 and Assassin's Creed Origins. So as you can imagine, like the winner of E3, if there's a winner in Peter Franzen's experience, is Ubisoft. I guess I'm just like a freaking Ubisoft fanboy now. I just seem to like their formula for making games, this kind of open world thing where you go around and you collect goodies and you just kind of move around and explore this world and, yeah, do some other combat and other stuff here and there, you know, but mostly it's just about exploring and collecting and upgrading and so these are games also that I feel like I can have reasonable hope for because I am three games, maybe four, how many? I think one, two, I'm at least three games into Assassin's Creed right now, and I'm not bored of this formula. And if they keep, I know they're changing quite a bit, so there is a little bit of question there. Are they going to be changing too much? I don't know. But I'm at this point, I'm kind of ready to give them the benefit of the doubt, even with the glitches that I know are going to be coming as I continue progressing through the Assassin's Creed series as I am for the first time. Like when I get to Unity, there'll probably be some issues that are annoying, or I'll discover all these things that other gamers have discovered before me, you know. But I suspect that this formula, I'm going to continue to enjoy, just as I have with Far Cry, the Far Cry games. I really enjoyed 2. I'm still playing and collecting diamonds in 2, also in 3, also in 4. I'm really enjoying these games. I think I'm really going to enjoy Far Cry 5. I think that between Far Cry 5 and Assassin's Creed Origins, those are, if I can have a more sure bet than some other things that I'm kind of looking forward to, I think those are probably my most sure bets. And certainly the most sure bets I've ever had of any game I'm looking forward to coming out of E3. So anyway, those are my most anticipated games of E3 2017. And I am now ready to actually start playing games. Oh my gosh, I have been listening to people talk about games. I've been watching footage of games. I've been putting in a lot of extra time, and I am ready. I'm actually thinking I'm going to take the last day of this week off. I want to play some games. My gosh. Having this carrot dangled in front of me all week long.
Incoming transmission.
Greg from Tulsa suggests a book as he writes this week. I recently searched Christian, fiction, and fantasy in my Overdrive app. One of the many options that I tried was Prophet by R.J. Larson. The story is about a young woman who has become the prophet of the infinite. It showcases her struggles between her responsibilities, her abilities, and her understanding of the world as she is told the will of the infinite. The world is very much placed in an allegory of the Old Testament, where God sends his prophets to serve his people and his enemies. Early in the story, she is given an example of existence without the infinite, which drives her interactions with her enemies by giving her the empathy of the infinite. The book gives a very good description of existence without the love of God. I give it a quality score of good and a relevance score of yes. You may have noticed or missed my mention of the Overdrive app, he continues. Well, that's a bonus for the summer of free. As many U.S. Americans know, we have a library system. Gasp! As a bonus of getting a library card, many libraries offer access to digital media, such as Audible books, videos, magazines, and books. I highly suggest looking into it, for I have a voracious, insatiable hunger to devour audio productions that would really hurt the pocketbook if it were not for the content provided by podcasts, past purchased audiobooks, and Overdrive. My library offers choices, everything from Stephen King to R.L. Stein and C.S. Lewis. Maybe yours will be better. Greg from Tulsa. Thank you very much for that, Greg. As a reminder, guys, feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but I have got to hear from you so that I know what fun and useful is. You can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. All right, let me just briefly pray in light of one request that was up on the forums at Christian Geek Central this week. And as a reminder, if you ever want prayer for anything, there are people there that will jump on and respond to your prayer requests on our forums at ChristianGeekCentral.com. All right, let me just pray briefly. God, we thank you right now for pets and just what a blessing it is for us to, in a small way, try to recapture the role that was intended for us to be rulers, guardians, caretakers of creation. And we thank you for pets and domesticated animals and how they give us just a glimpse of what was meant to be and what will be one day when you restore creation. And we thank you for just the fun and the comfort that they can give us. And we also pray for those times when they are sick, when they're dying, when we just see the results of death affecting them, the result of corruption in the world affecting them. And we pray that we in those times would be good caretakers and good guardians of them, and we would be wise in knowing how to steward their lives. And we pray that you would give us comfort as we have to also, you know, face the reality of death and sickness and pain as we see it in these animals that we really care about and that give us pleasure and joy and sometimes even a reminder of your love for us. So we pray that you would just be in our relationships with our pets, in our caring for our pets, and be with us as we go through difficult times because of death. So give us comfort in that. In your name we pray. Amen. Well, guys, as a reminder, if you would like some help finding a local Bible-teaching, truth-seeking church in your area, please email me at paeter@spiritblade.com. I would really be happy to help you with that, to just get online, do some searches in your local area, check out, you know, different things and statements of faith and stuff like that. You know, if you want, you know, a second brain to kind of help you look through your options, I would be happy to do that with you. And guys, this kind of popped into my mind earlier before I sat down to record, but I just wanted to thank you guys as podcast listeners. I really appreciate you guys tuning in every week or as often as you, however often you do. You know, when I made the choice to start a YouTube channel a few years ago, one of the only reasons I felt like I could do it is like, well, if I can double up content somehow, because I don't have time to create completely unique content all the time for YouTube. And so you've probably noticed that there's a lot of overlap between the content on YouTube and the content on this podcast, especially today. You're getting basically just the audio that's from the stuff I recorded for YouTube this week, largely. And I know that what comes with that is, you know, sometimes these odd references to, you know, this, you know, me talking like, you know, to a YouTube audience and saying right here on YouTube that, you know, whatever the crap, you know, and it just, you know, it seems incongruous, maybe is the right word, with this podcast, you know, and with listening to a podcast. And so I'm sorry for that. I do want to get better at kind of adjusting my language to something that's a little bit more universal. And I just didn't want you guys to feel like you're second fiddle. that's definitely not how I view the podcast and how I view you guys as an audience. In fact, when I think about the folks that listen to the podcast, they feel more like friends, I suppose, than those on that I only know from the YouTube channel. And that's because I think that there's a more consistent, maybe, crowd that listens to the podcast. And, you know, the YouTube videos, it can just be someone that randomly pops in, you know, and makes a comment or something every once in a blue moon, or they just watch one of my YouTube videos and then they're gone, you know. They just found it in some random search or something like that. There's a lot more potential for me to be interacting with people who I will only interact with once, you know, on YouTube, compared to the podcast audience, which tends to just, you know, put podcast listening into some kind of rhythm of their schedule. And so I do feel, you know, just kind of a little bit more of a connection to those of you that listen to the podcast. So I just wanted you to hear that from me, so that in case that thought was going through your mind of like, yeah, it feels like we're kind of being left behind, that's definitely not how I feel about those of you that listen to the podcast. So so anyway, I apologize if that's a little weird or off-putting, you know, to have with the language that I use in some of these segments you hear on the show be as though you are listening to a podcast, or every once in a while to, you know, for me to forget that, like, you can't see something that I'm talking about or whatever. So I do apologize for that. That's something I want to get better at. But I just appreciate you guys listening to this podcast, however often you do. That's a special thing to me. Anyway, guys, stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, well, we're not quite done with video games yet. I'm going to highlight some free video game options for the summer of free. So if you are like hyped up after E3, like, oh my gosh, I gotta play something new and shiny, just, you know, burn off some of your backlog for a week, and I'll try to give you some new and shiny stuff next week that will keep your hype from burning a hole in your pocketbook. I also plan to share another Spec Faith article with you guys, and then Winston Crutchfield is going to be back and take us into the long box, talking about He-Man and Thundercats, baby. And then also, as a final reminder, my live stream, the great backlog burning live stream of 2017. I can't remember what I'm going to call it. Is backlog burn or whatever it is. Did you guys need the reminder that I'm terrible at, like, marketing and all that kind of crap? Anyway, I'm doing a live stream. It's going to be next Friday, June 23rd, from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. I'm also going to embed that at ChristianGeekCentral.com, and I would love it if you would join me there. The purpose of this one is just it's probably among the more social, I suppose, of the podcast or the live streams that I've done in the past. Because I'm not going to be playing super intense games. I'm mostly going to be playing chill games and just kind of like grinding for loot and going out and finding collectibles and stuff. I'm just going to be burning, you know, through some extra little side type elements in the games that I play, that or just games that are in my backlog or whatever. So I would love to just hang out and talk with you guys about whatever's on your mind that I feel like I can comment on, at least while I'm multitasking and playing video games. So yeah, that's at 4 to 10 p.m. Pacific, June 23rd, Friday, at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff that I'm trying to make just for you guys. Once again, thank you guys very much for making time for this show in your routine or your schedule, or just as a one-shot if this is the first time you've listened. I hope that you guys have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue together to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampson with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
Well, that was Through the Looking Glass. It's another Mirror Universe episode, and surprisingly, was not that good. It wasn't. This is the transition point. If you remember the first Mirror Universe episode, Deep Space Nine, it was fairly serious and dark, and this one is kind of serious and dark, but with a lot more cartoon. And the later Mirror Universe episodes are just all cartoon. They're just farce. They're just goofy, silly, and while people die, it's all a melodrama, and you can enjoy it in a meta way and cackle at the silliness. This one is still when they're trying to take it seriously enough, but yet there's just enough goofiness to not let you take it seriously. It's in the worst of both worlds. Also, this has to do with Sisko and his love life, and as we've seen many times and we'll see again, as cool as Sisko is, when it comes to his love life, things get boring somehow. The episode begins when Chief O'Brien comes into Ops and takes Sisko hostage. And they get on the transporter and they beam to the Mirror Universe, because this is the Mirror Universe O'Brien. They've just somehow managed to magically make a beam that can, you know, go into the Mirror Universe without even trying anymore. And we see another downside of this Mirror Universe consistent episode thing, is they've already started to get very casual about going to another parallel dimension. And it just, it's part of the silliness that's not fun. You know, too much is parallel, too much is the same, and it's like everything that's different is different specifically for a reason. And of course you got the silliness of all these people who know each other in one universe happen to be all together in the other universe, and they're all exactly the same except for they're different ways that are meaningful, and you know, it's the kind of thing that you can't really trust random chance to have done, but because it's a science-based show, you can't really say this was a magic spell that made everyone different, even though it really is a magic spell when you think about it. So it turns out the original Mirror Sisko has died, and they need regular Sisko to pose as Mirror Sisko in order to rescue a human scientist who's helping create a scanner that'll help the bad guys find the rebels, because now they've started a rebellion and we're just completely trying to be Star Wars here. And of course the closest thing there is that makes that interesting is that the identity of this scientist is Jennifer Sisko, Sisko's wife. Yes, not only was there a Ben Sisko and a Jennifer Sisko, but they actually got married. You know, and of course, Ben Sisko, the real Ben Sisko, lost his wife with the Borg, and so you would think there would be all sorts of complex issues, and he doesn't know how to deal with her. No, Ben Sisko actually manages. It's hard to believe I would say this, but he's actually way too cool in this episode. He barely stumbles over anything. I mean, he gets thrown some real loops here, including one which is a disturbing concept when you think about it. Dax, although I don't know if she's called Dax in this universe or not, because at least they were smart enough to not mention her name, I believe, so we don't know if she's actually Dax or not, has the symbiont, but she is his lover in this universe, and so he's got to maintain his cover by going and doinking her. And so now our Ben Sisko has the memories of doinking Jadzia Dax, even though in a previous episode he was freaked out at the idea that she would find him attractive that way. So he's freaked out that she finds him attractive, but he doesn't bat an eye at, oh, what, you know, try to talk himself out of it or anything. And I mean, don't get me wrong, Jadzia Dax is hot, so I can't say I blame him, but he seems to be very messed up by this concept until it actually happens. Then he's okay with it. So, you know, and the episode just goes on, and, you know, you start to establish some of the traditions. A Ferengi will die in every episode. The intendant Kira is like the sexy, femme fatale, slinky villain of every Bond movie. And that gets really excessive. You know, it's like, that's where they want to put all their weird sexual issues, is in the Mirror Universe. And just, like I say, it gets overblown after a while, because it's not really pulling out all the stops, but you can tell they think they're pulling out all the stops. And it just ends up in this very uneven middle ground. So yeah, the story is fairly predictable, nothing too special. And it's I can't really recommend this unless you're interested in the storyline of the Mirror Universe. Because that storyline never affects the regular episodes. They're all their own episodes. And yeah, they do form a multi-part story of their own. And I guess because it introduces Jennifer Sisko into this, and we get rid of Mirror Ben Sisko, we'll never see him again. But other than that, there's not that much, even in the Mirror Universe storyline, to grant this. So, yeah, I'd recommend you skip this episode unless you really want to see all the Mirror Universe there is. But next time we have a much better pair of episodes, a two-parter in the middle of Season 3 that puts another twist turn on the major storyline with the Dominion. So we'll see you then.